All right. Well, this morning I want to talk about something a little bit different. The message is called Birds, Bugs, and Beasts. And I want to talk about animals. And it's kind of a weird thing to talk about at church, I guess. But I think animals are really fascinating. And I think they really help declare the glory of God. Just as we look at animals and the creativity and the design of them. And I just find them super, super fascinating. And I think of like in Hebrews 11:6, where it says, "And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him." And so I think understanding creation and God as a creator is really integral to us just believing in God. We have to believe that he exists, and then that he's a rewarder, that he blesses and that he curses, that he responds to us. Those are the key things that we need to understand to have genuine faith. And so for me, when I think about the creation, it really makes me think, man, God is amazing and he's powerful and he is an artist and he's an engineer and he's super amazing. Sometimes with our youth group, we'll watch some different videos on creation and apologetics and things. And I love the ones that have the different animals. You may have seen things like that, maybe the old Moody videos, or maybe even just watching a nature show and you see these different weird animals. The one that comes to my mind is there's a weird little bird that lives in Australia. He's not really very big. He's about the size of a chicken, 3 or 4 pounds. And he's called the incubator bird or the mound bird. And what this bird does is it builds a nest. And what they said, it's like 20 feet wide of a max. And this is the part I just can't believe, so I hate to even say it. 50 feet high, like from the ground building up, like a beaver dam, a big pile of wood. And then it can be 3 to 6 feet deep on top of that. So there's this huge mound that this bird builds. And then when the bird lays an egg, it has to keep the inside of the nest at 91 degrees, plus or minus 1 degree. And so what the bird does is it sits inside this huge mound that it built, and it thinks, oh man, it's 92, it's getting really hot. And then it hops outside and moves some leaves and stuff off at the top of this big mound and then goes back in. And then it might think, oh, it's it needs to stay at about 99% humidity. There's a little more flexing that can be there, but it'll realize the humidity's off and it'll go and scoot some sand on the top or scoot it off. And it's just like, man, that is just crazy. But that's in Australia. And that, you know, those animals are weird. There's all kinds of weird stuff there. And so what I want to do today is not just talk about these really weird things that you could find in Australia, but weird stuff that's around us all the time. And so it's really birds, bugs, and beasts from my childhood. So it's stuff that I grew up with that was all around me, because if these things are going to speak of the glory of God, they shouldn't just be things that are obvious to people who live in Australia. That would be obvious to all of us, and it should be around us all the time. So there's one story I really like in the Bible, maybe my favorite, maybe one of my favorites. I'm always afraid someone's going to go back and, well, you said this was your favorite, and you said this was your favorite, and you said this was your favorite. So one of my favorites was the book of Job. It's the story of Job and the trials that he went through. And you guys are all familiar with the story, but just a real quick recap. Job was this really good man who had lived a really righteous life. And God looked down on Job and was really pleased with him. And he said to Satan, he's like, hey, Satan, have you ever seen anybody like Job? Isn't he awesome? And Satan's like, well, yeah, because you treat him so well. You know, let me strike him and then we'll see. And so God lets him do this. And Job loses all of his riches, his livestock, his family. Everybody dies except his wife. And his health and just everything falls apart in like the first 2 chapters of Job. And then there's like a whole bunch of chapters of his friends coming and saying, what did you do, Job? You must have done something really bad. Why don't you just fess up and admit? And so you can imagine in that process how hard that would be, even just if you picture yourself being the most righteous person around, the most God-fearing, the most responsive to God, and you look around at everybody else who's less righteous, and they all seem more blessed. That'd be a little hard, wouldn't it? Like, my life stinks, my health is terrible, I'm in complete misery, my kids have all died, and yet I felt like I was doing pretty well. And everybody around me seems to be sinning more and disregarding God more, and yet they seem blessed. So what's up? So you can imagine how after a while that would get kind of frustrating, and you might have some questions for God, right? And that's what happens is as these chapters progress through the book, Job's getting a little frustrated, like, oh, I wish I could talk to God. You know, I wish I'd let him know how things are. And then God reveals himself to Job. And he says, hey, Job, I have some stuff to share with you. And the fascinating thing is that he doesn't say, hey, Job, here's what happened. See, you know, I really do like you. And I was just sitting in heaven, and I was just commenting to Satan how awesome you are. And we had this little spiritual battle, and that's why we're in this spot. He doesn't do that. Instead, he's like, hey, Job, quiet down. I have some stuff to share with you. Do you ever think about the seas? Pretty awesome. The clouds and the weather and the hail and the snow and the sky and space. And then he starts talking about animals. And I'll just read part of that to you here. It's the end of Job 38. It's where it starts. He says, do you hunt prey for the lioness and satisfy the hunger of the lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in a thicket? Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food? Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? Do you know the time they give birth? They crouch down and bring forth their young. Their labor pains are ended. Their young thrive and grow strong in the wilds. They leave and do not return. Who let the wild donkey go free? Who untied its ropes? I gave it the wasteland as its home, the salt flats as its habitat. It laughs at the commotion in the town. It does not hear a driver shout. It ranges the hills for its pasture and searches any green thing. Will the wild ox consent to serve you? Will it stay by your manger at night? Can you hold it to the furrow with a harness? Will it till the valleys behind you? Will you rely on it for its great strength? Will you leave your heavy work to it? Can you trust it to haul in your grain and bring it to your threshing floor? The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, though they cannot compare with the wings and feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sand, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. She treats her young harshly as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labor was in vain, for God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Yet when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at the horse and rider. Do you give the horse its strength or clothe its neck with a flowing mane? Do you make it leap like a locust, striking terror with its proud snorting? It paws fiercely, rejoicing in its strength, and it charges into the fray. It laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. It does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against its side, along with the flashing spear and lance. In frenzied excitement, it eats up the ground. It cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds. At the blast of the trumpet, it snorts, aha! It catches the scent of battle from afar, the shout of commanders and the battle cry. Does the hawk take flight by your wisdom and spread its wing towards the south? Does the eagle soar at your command and build its nest on high? It dwells on a cliff and stays there at night. A rocky crag is its stronghold. From there, it looks for food. Its eyes detect it from afar. Its young ones feast on blood, and where the slain are, there it is. And I just think that's a really fascinating thing where Job's going through this huge trial. His whole life has fallen apart. He wants to talk to God, and God comes along and says, well, Job, I have some thoughts for you. Let me share this with you. And he starts talking about animals. And you know, it's like, Job, do you ever think about a horse? I mean, horses are pretty cool. Have you ever seen one that go into battle and how fearless they are and how awesome they are? And an ostrich can run 60 miles an hour, even faster than the horse. And it may be dumb as a doornail, but man, is it fast. And you ever think about all these different things and all these things that happen in the wild? People aren't doing this or controlling this or breeding this. These things are happening. They're giving birth and they're raising their young, and people don't even have any idea what's going on. That's what God wanted to share with Job. Like, wow. Wow. And what a good thing for us just to think of just the awesomeness of God as revealed in nature, and to be able to stop and just say, you know, my life may be hard. I may be going through some tough things at times. I may face my challenges, but
God knows what he's doing. And he's powerful. He's in control. He's smart. I can entrust my life to him. And so it's in that spirit that I want to share these things and just think a little bit more about creation. So let's pray. God, we ask that you would just bless this time here. We thank you that you are so amazing. And I wonder if you had an opportunity to just come and to reveal yourself to us and share a few thoughts with us, what you would say to us, because I sure would not expect you to talk about animals. And yet, that's one of the ways you revealed your awesomeness to us. And so I pray you just help us to understand you a little bit better, to see your glory, to see your creativity, to see your power as demonstrated through these animals. And so we ask your blessing on this time here. Pray that it wouldn't just increase our scientific knowledge here this morning, but God, that you would speak to us and affect our hearts as we reflect on you and your works. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. All right. I like this verse in Psalms 104, verse 24. It says, "O Lord, what a variety of things you've made. In wisdom, you've made them all. The earth is full of your creatures." And so I want to just look at a few different creatures here this morning. We'll start off with the butterfly. Butterfly seems like kind of a churchy thing to talk about. We've probably all heard some kind of sermon illustration with the butterfly, maybe talking about how we're regenerated or born again or something like that. And I think it does make a really good illustration. I didn't realize until up until a few years ago that butterflies undergo a complete transformation when they go through the metamorphosis process. Because I guess I just kind of thought, well, they go from being a caterpillar and they kind of lose their fuzz and then they grow wings. But it's more than that. When they're inside the cocoon, they melt down into a butterfly soup with only liquid in it. Like there are not any floating antennae left. There are not any legs. There's nothing left inside that soup except just liquid and a little memory disk. That's all that's left. And it reforms into this completely 100% different creature. It's like, wow, that is wild. And then when it comes out of the cocoon, it needs to eat. That's the first thing it needs to do. It comes out, it's hungry. And the weird thing is when it forms, its mouth is formed in two different parts that need to be assembled. So it comes out of the cocoon, and then it has to fix his mouth and put that other piece on, and then he can go and eat. It's like, what? Like, that is just bizarre. And of course, as a kid growing up, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew a little bit about metamorphosis, but the more you know, it's like, it's just so mind-blowing. But even just their beauty, it's like, they look like they're made of like stained glass, right? It's like so cool. There's different colors. We've probably all seen, you know, like really beautiful blue ones and all kinds of different colors. And they are so cool looking. Woodpeckers. I guess this is a pileated woodpecker. Who knew? I posted a picture I took similar to this on the web a couple of years ago. And one of my friends who's really into birds is like, "Oh, wow, a pileated woodpecker." I'm like, "What are you talking about? That's a red-headed woodpecker. Everybody knows that." And I looked it up, and sure enough, he's right. Red-headed woodpecker actually looks like this. So, no, not really. They look like that. It's like, okay, you're right. That is not a red-headed woodpecker. But we have some trees that are dying on our property, and so we're getting a bunch of woodpeckers. And a couple of years ago, this woodpecker made its nest right, maybe 15 feet from where I sit every day working on my computer. And the amazing thing is, I didn't really hear it building its nest. You would think it would be like, brrr, all day long. Like, what's going on? I go get my BB gun, take care of that. But I watched them, and after it was built, I started watching these things, and they're kind of, they're actually kind of peaceful unless you happen to be sleeping right then. And it's amazing. They make this almost perfectly round hole into the tree. And so that's kind of fascinating that they can do that just with their beak. Another thing that's cool about woodpeckers is how they find bugs, is they just hop around the tree and they listen. Have you ever thought about how hard that is? Like, if you could do that like for a science experiment, like take a stethoscope and go around to trees in your yard and listen for a bug, and then find one, and then take a drill and drill a hole, and then tweezers, and be like, oh yeah, there it is. I don't know. It seems like that'd be really hard to do. But they hop around and do that, like, that's easy. Another cool thing about woodpeckers Their tongues go to the back of their mouth and then up and into their skull. So they wrap all the way around, and they divide around their spinal column and then join back into one again. And so if you think of it from like an evolutionary standpoint, how you can imagine it evolving to like go back, but like how does it divide and go around and then come back together and then go back up over? It's like, how would that ever evolve? That just is really fascinating. There are a lot of things like that that would be hard to explain. Daddy long legs, pretty cool. We had a lot of those growing up. I grew up in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and they seemed like they were all over the place. And the thing that I liked about these was you could pull their legs off. How many of you have done that? Anybody? Okay, good for you. Okay, you pull their legs off, and their leg keeps wiggling. It's like, how awesome is that? And you don't really feel bad, because it's not like it's a puppy, right? It's a spider. And I don't know, I just don't feel bad torturing spiders. And then, I don't know why if you squish them, they stink to high heaven. I don't really like that about them, but some people say they're poisonous. I don't think they are. It's all on the internet, and who knows who you're supposed to believe. Garden spiders, I always call them gardener spiders, but as near as I can tell, I'm the only one that calls them that, so I guess I just heard it wrong or something. But they're a real distinctive yellow and black, and we would have these, not like a ton of them, but every once in a while you would see one. I remember one particular summer we had one that lived in our backyard, and we would go catch crickets or flies or things and throw it into the spider web, and it would run out and wrap them all up and then save it for later, suck its blood out, or whatever they do. I don't know exactly how spiders work. But it was pretty fun, pretty cool to watch. And sometimes you could just like shake the web a little bit, and he'd come running out, like, who's there? Like, who did I get to eat now? And we've probably all heard things like, you know, their webs are, they have different strings. So like some of the strings are sticky and some of them aren't. So they walk on the ones that are not sticky, and then the sticky ones catch bugs. And I don't know how all that works, but I think that's pretty fascinating. But the idea that there is an animal who makes its own net to catch other animals. Like, that's a pretty wild thing. Right? That's pretty cool that they can do that. And then I don't know how their bodies work. I suppose I could have read up on this a little bit, but like, do they have like spools of string on the inside and it just unravels? Or do they form string as it comes out, like a little chemical reaction? Like, that's pretty wild that it can do that. I find stuff like that pretty fascinating. And then the web itself, some of them are so beautiful. They have like the little funnel ones and then these real spectacular, beautiful ones. Have you ever seen like on Pinterest where you can spray paint a web white and then stick black paper on it? And then you have a picture. I want to do that someday. That'd be pretty cool. But it's like, man, they're so amazing. So wild. Crickets are pretty awesome. They rub the front part of their wings together to make kind of a violin sound, which can be frustrating if it's in your bedroom and you can't find it. But generally, I think it's a pretty pleasant sound. And for us to make that sound, that would be hard to do, right? Like, okay, you have the next 4 hours to figure out how to rub two things together and make a little violin sound. That would be hard, even with our technology. You think, oh, maybe a rubber band or whatever. I don't know how you would do that. It's a pretty wild thing. And I guess they have different songs for different events. So like they have one that's like a mating call, like, hey, I'm available. And then they have another one that's like, woohoo, I found someone. And they sing different things. And then you probably know that you can tell the temperature by listening to their chirps. If you count how many chirps they do in 14 seconds and then add, I think it was 40 to that. Yeah, then that gives you the degrees Fahrenheit. And I guess there's different formulas for different types of crickets. So if you want Celsius, then you have to subtract 32 from that and take that times 5/8. So I think God likes Fahrenheit more than Celsius. So I guess if you really want to know the temperature, you probably need a chart of different crickets and what their little formula is, but it's just weird, just really, really weird. Cool little bugs. This is a grasshopper. This isn't actually like one from my childhood. This one's a little bit different. The ones that I grew up with were just green or kind of an ugly brown, and that's how they looked. This one's called a painted grasshopper. I've only seen one in my life. And it was actually here in El Paso, And it was, I think, maybe the first or second time I went up to Aztec Caves up in Franklin Mountain National Park. And I saw this grasshopper and took a picture of it. And it's like, wow, they have cool grasshoppers here. These are amazing. They're so pretty. And then that was the only one I've ever seen. So, but they're kind of cool. And I guess if a grasshopper was as big as a human, or if a human could jump as well as a grasshopper could, a human could jump 100 yards. That would be pretty wild. They can really jump far. And so I think it'd be pretty cool, like in the playoffs. Be pretty awesome. Oh, man, he scored again. You could have like midair collisions and battles and stuff. Pretty fun. Okay, migration. We're going to talk a lot about migration. When I grew up, this is what the sky looked like all the time. There'd be these lines of Canadian geese flying across. And I have a closer picture just for fun. It's a little bit prettier. But I guess scientists have wondered for a long time why, when there's that V in the sky, that one line is longer than the other. And I guess they counted and they figured out that there's more birds on that side. So they got that resolved. But migration's kind of a tricky thing. It's hard to know how the birds know, like, where to go. Like, even, how do they know to go south? And I guess when birds are born, they don't necessarily know exactly where to go, but they know that they need to go south. And when it comes time to migrate, they just kind of turn in their cage and will face south, like, all right, I'm ready to go. And how do they know that? Like, how do they know what direction south is? I mean, you know, for some of us, if we release church right now, it might take you a few hours just to find Mexico. You're so directionally challenged, you know. It's not that easy of a thing. And these birds can do it with bird brains. And that's fascinating. So let me talk about how they do this. It's pretty crazy. So one thing that might seem obvious is that they can use the sun. So if you know that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, then if you're going south, you could just kind of keep the sun to your left during the morning and keep it to your right afternoon. And roughly, that should kind of keep you going south. That makes sense. Even for a bird, though, that's pretty cool to realize that. Like, okay, yeah, I know how to do this thing. But they're way more complicated than that. For us, we can use a compass. And we know that a compass is based upon magnetic fields, magnetic north. And so some birds also use magnetism. So they can sense the magnetic fields and know which way south is. I just think that's wild. Like, how in the world can they do that? That's really fascinating. And that's not all they use. It gets a little crazier than that. Some homing pigeons. Homing pigeons, of course, are famous for being able to figure out directions and get back to where they were released from. There were some birds who they did an experiment with, and they started in Great Britain, and they took some of the birds, and they took half of the birds, and they took them to Venice, and they took half of the birds and took them to Boston. And then they released them. And within 2 weeks, the birds had found their way back to Great Britain. And of course, you know, they put little blindfolds on them and stuff so they couldn't tell where they're going. But it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy that they could do that. Like, you know, they can't ask anybody for directions. They can't look at a map. They just have to have this sense of, here's where I'm at somewhere on the globe, and here's where I need to go. That's wild. Okay, I'm going to read this one to you because it's just too crazy. Okay, in one noted experiment, German scientist Hans Wallraff transported homing pigeons to a very distant location. To ensure that the birds did not receive any external navigational information, they were transferred under stringent conditions. The pigeons were transported in a closed, airtight container, provided bottled air. Light was turned on and off at random times. Loud white noise was played. The cylinders were enclosed in magnetic coils that provided a changing magnetic field. Finally, the cylinders were mounted on a tilting turntable connected to a computer that varied both the rotation and tilt of the cylinders. After release, at the distant and completely unknown area, the birds were able to fly home to their roost, apparently without trouble, other than an initial case of nausea. I can imagine they get out there, whoa, what has just happened? So one of the cool things I like about that story is, do you ever like go to school like with a kid who was just a little off, and they like to torture animals. You think of somebody like that? What I like about this story is that there are jobs for people like that. Like, that's wild. You can do bird experiments. There's some amazing stuff going on there. They don't know exactly how they're able to do this. Two more things on migration. One is they can use their sense of smell. So if they've been a place before, if you can imagine, like maybe in El Paso, maybe the, maybe the river has a certain smell. Like if you go to the river, it's like, oh, it kind of smells like water. You can imagine maybe up in the Northwest, there's some cattle ranches that have a smell when you drive past them. And maybe the refinery has a smell when you go past it. So if you could take different smells, you could triangulate and figure out where you are based upon smells. And there are birds that can do that. That's wild. Okay, here's the weirdest one. Okay, so some birds migrate at night. And they use the stars. Okay, that's pretty cool. So are they born with like a little constellation map in their head? That would seem amazing, but I think what they really do is even more amazing than that. So how many of you could point out the North Star? Okay, a few people. The West Side, everybody raised their hand. I'm like, you guys are a bunch of liars. So you guys are more honest than the West Side. I like that. So basically, the way the North Star Polaris works is if you took the Earth and you start at the South Pole and made a line straight from the South Pole through the North Pole and into space, that line would pretty much hit Polaris. It'd be pretty close to the North Star. And so wherever we're at, the North Star is north. And as the Earth spins, what it looks like is that star stays in place and all the other stars rotate around it. But it's at the rate of the Earth's spin, so it'd be similar to how fast the moon moves or the sun moves across the sky. Real slow, right? The stars real gradually moving around that one spot. So one of these bird torturer people got some birds and put them in a planetarium. And they stick them in there, and the birds sit there for a while, and then they see the North Star, and then they point in the opposite direction, like, all right, I'm ready to roll. Let's go south. Okay, so that's kind of cool. So they either knew what the North Star was, or they knew how it works. Okay, so now what they did is they said, what if we made a different star, the Pole Star? And so they looked at the constellation Orion, and there's a star in Orion called Betelgeuse, and Betelgeuse is a real bright star there. And they made everything rotate around Betelgeuse so that it looks like that's the North Star. And the birds look at this, and they're like, oh, I need to go this way. And they reoriented based upon being able to tell that all of the stars were spinning around that one star. And it's a bird. It's a bird. And again, remember, it's not spinning super fast like that. You can't notice it, right, if you're looking at the sky. You would have to notice it over a period of hours. Wow, I just think that's incredible. So anyway, there are lots of cool bird stuff. This is a cardinal. We had cardinals where I grew up, beautiful little red birds. We had orioles, kind of an orange and black bird that made like a sack nest, all kinds of things. Owls, blackbirds. Blackbirds can sing and sing harmony with themselves at the same time, like have two lines of music going at once. Of course, like here we have mockingbirds that can mimic all kinds of stuff. A lot of cool different birds. Bees are pretty cool. I remember as a kid, my friend had to collect some insects for a science project or something. And I don't know how we learned that we could do this, but you can actually kind of sneak up behind a bee when it's on a flower and grab it by its wings. I have a very distinct memory of doing this, and we did it a bunch of times and didn't get stung. And even though I'm very sure I did this, I'm not going to try it again. But I'm hoping one of you will try it. Let me know if that's really true that you can do that. But that they can make honey, and they'll go out and they'll scout out and be like, oh, here's a field of flowers over here. And they go back to the beehive, and then they do a little, they call it the waggle dance. They do this little dance, and it's like a little figure eight, and they dance around. And the bees can tell by the way they wiggle and the number of times they go around, you know, they're saying like, oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of food like a mile and a half in this direction. Cool stuff. Hummingbirds are like the helicopters of the bird world, and they can fly normal, and they can hover, and they can fly backwards. They can fly upside down. And their wings beat at 50 to 200 beats per second. That's just insanely fast. And we have some hummingbirds. We have a little hummingbird feeder in front of our house. And they're fun to watch. And they're just so busy. Just all over the place. And we also have turtles, which is quite a contrast. When we moved here, I remember reading a story shortly after we moved here about someone who had moved, and they moved with their turtle, but then they couldn't find their turtle after they moved. And then like 10 years later, they found it in a box and it was still alive. And so they're like the opposite of hummingbirds. So turtles, if you don't feed them, they just stop moving. They're just like, okay, I'll just chill. And then they're just not burning calories, or hardly any at all, just enough to survive. And so I always watch the hummingbirds. It's like, you know, if you would just chill out a little bit, you wouldn't need to eat so much. Because they're burning calories like crazy. They're constantly drinking that sugar water. Ants are pretty cool how they can do their colonies, and they communicate, and they can find food. You could put a donut up there, and an ant would figure out how to detect it and find it. And then all the ants would form a little line. They'd go up and start feasting. I mean, it's crazy. And I was thinking about our driveway. I've never read anything about this, but why do ants build their homes in cracks in driveways? And it hit me. It's like, it's a little bunker. It's like they go into that crack, and then they have like 4 inches of concrete on top of them that defends them. It's like, how smart is that? That's pretty awesome. So anyway, we all know ants are pretty cool. Cows are pretty awesome. Do you know that cows can jump? I remember in grade school, it was probably high school, we were doing some reading on the Salem witch trials, and I think they had accused one of the alleged witches of making a cow jump 6 feet into the air. And I remember my English teacher saying, you know, oh, that's ridiculous. Cows can't jump. I'm like, cows can jump. Because when my grandpa's cows would get out, you know, I was a little kid, it's like, well, how do you get them back in? Well, you just chase them into the fence. You chase them in the fence, and they jump over. It's not super graceful or anything, but it's kind of cool. But anyway, I didn't want to talk about the jumping ability, but that they can make milk. I mean, you think like babies can kind of live off milk. Like, milk's kind of all you need. And it's pretty weird that cows make milk. Other animals do too, but that's just wild that something so life-giving can come from an animal. And it's really weird if you think about it too long. Like, ew. So, peacocks are cool. I mean, they have the feathers, but even that little thing on their head and the back and the blue color, it's like, you just look at that, it's like, somebody painted that. Like, that didn't just happen. It's so incredible. And I grew up with some peacocks that lived right down the road from us. And you can hear them crying sometimes. And wow, they're so pretty. So pretty. And one of the favorite things in my childhood were fireflies or lightning bugs. And when we were kids, we would run around chasing them. They're kind of slow. So you run around and you're just waiting. And something lights up close to you. And you go over and you grab them. Or you hit them with a tennis racket. That's another way to do it. And then you catch them and you put them in a jar. And you make a little lantern. Like, cool. It's kind of like what we did for glow sticks before they invented glow sticks. And then you could take them, and you could do this with the glow stick too, and you kind of smear them on your arm or something. It's like, woo, you know, have glowing war paint or something. I guess that's frowned upon in my reading. They don't like you to do that anymore. When I was a kid, though, that was pretty awesome. But, like, what a weird little creature. Just so wild. And I guess there are certain ones scientists can set up LED lights and get them to like glow to a beat. And they'll glow all at once in the same pattern. I thought it'd be really cool if they could set them up like some people do their Christmas lights and like get a whole field of them to like Trans-Siberian Orchestra Christmas or something. That'd be cool. So again, this verse, Psalms 104:24. What a variety of things you've made. In wisdom you've made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. And these are just some of the common ones. There's so many weird things, deep sea fish, and all kinds of stuff. They're super amazing. And another verse I really like on creation is in Romans 1. And Romans 1, starting verse 18, it says, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Verse 25, instead of believing what they knew was the truth about God, they deliberately chose to believe lies. So they worshiped the things God made, but not the Creator himself, who is to be praised forever. And I think our response to creation is going to go one of two ways. Because I think everybody, whether it's a creationist or Christian, an evolutionist, an atheist or scientist, whatever, everybody can look at creation and say, wow, that's crazy. That's amazing. Everybody does that. So then where do you go from that? So who gets the credit for that? And it's one of two places. I think you can go back and say, wow, somebody designed that, somebody engineered that, somebody painted that, somebody was the artist, and praise goes to them. Or you can say, wow, nature itself is amazing. Nature itself gets the credit. And that's why people worship nature. And it's so easy for people to go that direction. We worship the created things rather than the Creator. And so I just think it's helpful for us to stop. And, you know, if someone doesn't know God yet, for them to stop and look around and be like, okay, obviously somebody made all this. And to be in awe and to be humbled by that and be like, wow, whoever that is, I am not worthy. I am not worthy. And then I think to come to God, and God reached out to them and loved them by sending Jesus to go to the cross to pay for their sins, so that even though they're not worthy, that they could be made worthy, that they could enter heaven because they were forgiven. And then I think if we could go back to Job again, just I think for us to remember, it's like, okay, in the midst of all my trials and struggles and problems and fears, just to remember, there is an amazing God out there who has all kinds of stuff going on. And he's bigger than our trials. And he loves us. And he's powerful. And he knows what he's doing. And we can entrust ourselves to him. So let's pray. God, we thank you for this time here today. God, we thank you just for some of the amazing animals that you've created and just how they show how awesome, how powerful you are, and how ingenious. And God, I just praise you for that. Thank you that even though you're so amazing, that you still love us and have a relationship with us. Thank you that you didn't just kind of put up with us somehow, but you've gone way beyond that. You've brought us into your family and forgiven us. And wow, it's incredible that we can have a relationship with you. And so I pray, God, you would help us just to be humble before you and to recognize that you're powerful and that you love us and that you know what you're doing. You know, we just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.